my love into another man. I'm going back to Savannah, mama, write my initial down. Write my initial down. Cause it meant all he meant, and it don't want to drown.
Hello and welcome back to the Lehigh Valley with Love podcast. I'm your host, George Wacker, and I want to say a quick thank you, as always, to our sponsors, Michael Bernadin with RE/MAX Real Estate, Molly's Irish Grill and Sports Pub, Wind Creek Event Center, WDIY 88.1 FM, and our friends at Banco Beverage Company. Today, we're talking with folk and blues guitarist Todd Albright, a 12-string fingerstyle player known for bringing early folk and blues songs to life through the music of artists like Lead Belly, Blind Willie McTell, Blind Lemon Jefferson, Mississippi John Hurt, and others. Todd's new album, Blues for Dexter Linwood, was released through Misfortune Records. We're going to talk more about that in a bit. The new Detroit label he founded, and he'll be performing at Godfrey Daniels in Bethlehem on May 16th. Todd, thank you for dealing with all that in the beginning, and thank you for joining me today. How are we doing?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
So, for people who haven't heard you before, and I've spent all morning listening to your stuff, so it's been a great morning. What do you like for people to, or I guess like what I'm trying to say is, how would you describe what you do, and what drew you so strongly to this older folk and blues tradition?
Well, I guess the first part of the question is, are you asking what am I trying to get across to people?
Yeah, like when somebody comes to Godfrey Daniels on May 16th, I guess, what do you hope that they can expect?
Well, they're going to get essentially a history lesson on the foundational music of America, of the world, mm-hmm. you know, of the Western world anyway. You know, and the country blues is the basis for everything.
Right.
You know, I mean, otherwise we'd be dancing to military marches and waltzes right now. If it weren't for the country blues and the people that invented it.
And talk a little bit, I mean, right, we could do a whole podcast. You could do like a documentary on this. I've watched videos on this. But talk a little bit about the older folk and blues tradition. And what drew you to it? Why do you love it so much?
You know, I mean, it's probably the most honest music going. I mean, in respect to, you're talking about when we're, I guess to go back to the beginnings of it, I mean, a lot of this came out of the minstrel show and ragtime tradition that was popular music in the United States at that particular point, especially for black folks and certainly white folks once they got hit.
Mm-hmm.
Evolved out of that tradition. I mean, there were traveling tent shows that crisscrossed the United States. So the aspect of making your living on the road is important also. Mm-hmm. This predates recorded music. So, I mean, if you wanted to hear music in your life before the 20s, before the teens, you had to play an instrument or know somebody that did, or else you were not going to hear any kind of music because it didn't exist otherwise. And a lot of the songs that were found in country blues were written either by folks that were performing in these minstrel troupes, or even, you know, some of the more pop oriented things came out of Tin Pan Alley, and it just bled into the zeitgeist of American music. And I think a lot of it has to do, I mean, my attraction to it is the simplicity of it, in sense that we're talking about a lot of times one man and a guitar, mm-hmm. singing, you know, and it doesn't get more honest than that. There's no auto tune. There's no plugging in of anything, you know. It's just not a thing I do, you know. I don't plug anything. And it can be raw. It can be very sophisticated. It can be a lot of different things depending on what region of the United States you're focusing on. Like, I primarily play music that comes from the what they've dubbed the Piedmont region, which I think is just an academic word for the southeastern portion of the United States. Mm-hmm. And there they had a very strong ragtime influence to, ragtime was primarily a piano-based music.
Right.
And a lot of times if you didn't have the piano is a stationary instrument, so you're kind of stuck wherever that piano is. And if there's nobody right. there, you're not going to make a dime. Mm-hmm. So when the guitar became less novelty of the Victorian era and got into the hands of more folks with the advent of the mail order catalog, where you could get these guitars for a couple of dollars, they're very cheap. The idea was to try to mimic a piano as best you could with a guitar and take this music to where the people were rather than sure. waiting for them to show up. So, I mean, Reverend Gary Davis referred to it as a piano around your neck. So that automatically means you're going to be finger-picking guitar because you want to have bass lines and you want to be able to play a melody on top of it and make it as close as you can to what you hear in a piano rag.
And that actually brings me to my second question, which 12-string guitar is such a part of your sound.
Mm-hmm.
I know the difference, right? Most people know the difference, but sure. why a 12-string guitar? What do you get out of it compared to a 6-string?
Well, if you go back to the early guys that were, and there's not a lot of them, there's a handful of guys that mostly came from, there was a couple that came from Texas, and the vast majority of them came from Georgia. And at that particular time, the 12-string guitar was the loudest instrument you could buy, the loudest guitar you could buy. And, you know, all these guys were street musicians. And you were competing with traffic, and you were competing with everything that was going on in the streets, and you needed to be heard. And this was before there was such a thing as a resonator guitar, which, you know, definitely is louder. But at the time, this was the loudest thing going. And also, you're dealing with the way a 12-string is set up, these strings are set up in what we call courses. So two strings, yeah. you're playing as if it were one string. You're holding down right. that. And you have your normal 6-string set of strings, and then you have what we know as octave strings. So these strings are apart, and they're a different gauge string, mm-hmm. and it gives you that 12-string sound because you're playing two different octaves at the same time.
Right. And your new album, Blues for Dexter Linwood, includes songs connected to artists like Blind Willie McTell, Blind Lemon Jefferson. We talked about some of these earlier. When you approach a song like that, because these are songs that have, you know, history behind them.
Sure.
How do you approach it? Like, how much of it is you and how much of it is, you know, the original piece? Like, I'm just curious how you interpret these.
I mean, I was mentored greatly by a friend of mine named Paul Jeremiah, and what he said about it, and I completely agree, is that if the original guy who recorded the song walked into the room, you would want him to know it was his song, you know. So you don't want to completely obliterate what the artist, the original artist, had intended. By mm-hmm. you know, it's like the songs like the Statesboro Blues. Now, I try to play that one as close as I can to the way Willie McTell did it, only because it's musically perfect. And you can't do better than what Willie McTell did on that particular song. But I, all the time, if people say, oh, I play, you know, the Statesboro Blues, but I do it my way. And it's like, well, you can get away with that with a lot of things and play, you know, you can play some other kind of music and just throw these lyrics on it. But at the end of the day, musically, Willie McTell's recording of this song was perfect. And I think you should strive to do that in very just certain situations where the music is, you're not going to do it better than he did it. You're just not. Nobody's gonna. It's not going to happen. You know,
isn't that kind of your responsibility as well? If you're saying, hey, I'm sharing these songs with you.
Sure.
So you would expect the audience to kind of want to experience it as it would have been back then.
Well, it's not a cause playing sort of a situation. And okay. I don't go out of my way to do it as, I mean, I don't even think I could play it exactly note for note as it was on the record. I mean, mm-hmm. and if I did that, well, I could just sit at home and play the record, you know?
Sure.
So you right. are, you know, it's like, what I tend to do is, you know, let's say we're talking about a Blind Lemon Jefferson song out of the key of A. Now, Lemon had a wide vocabulary of licks and phrasing that he did out of the key of A. And I may take things from other Lemon songs in that same key and put it into this other song. So it's all going to be Lemon. It's just not going to be what he did on that song. They'll still be his licks. They'll still be his stuff. So it's about keeping yourself interested and keeping it interesting for the audience and still preserving the foundation of what was being done, you know?
Sure. And how, I mean, I would imagine just as a musician, you know, how much original stuff are you producing as well? Like in this vein, is that?
Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot of talk about like improvisation, and that happens with me only because I'm not capable of doing the song the same way twice, even if I tried, because I never have a set. I don't have a set arrangement or anything, you know, whatever. Oh, it's time to do this. And then I do something. And then, you know, then eventually you get through that song.
But I didn't have this question up here, but I'm curious because I interviewed a bluegrass band. They're all younger, like mostly younger guys the other day.
Oh, yeah.
And you were just talked about how, you know, you're explaining how, you know, the piano was stagnant. It kind of like you're reaching the masses. Do you feel that more younger people are getting into this type of music just because they're able to get exposed to it? I have a personal friend from high school who's in a bluegrass band in Texas, Sour Bridges, and they do really well. And he, you know, I'm in my 40s. I don't know. I'm just curious your thoughts on the genre itself.
Well, music, I mean, with the country blues, that's all I'm versed enough to talk about, really. And
sure.
I see it coming in and out of fashion about every 10 to 15 years. So I've, yeah. At this point, I've seen it come in and out a good 3 times.
Okay.
And, you know, it ebbs and flows. I mean, sometimes it's just the most unpopular thing in the world to do. And then other times it's, you know, you'll have something like the film, like, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah.
And that will, then interest will be gained there, and then it'll fade out, and then it'll come back. And I think we're starting to come back maybe a little bit, and I don't know why, but I am seeing some younger guys interested in starting to play this. Guys in their 20s, 30s are starting to play this music, and it's good. We've lost so many of the guys that came out of the folk revival of the 60s within the last couple of months that we really need to, you know, we need a refill, you know, on guys playing this, because all of my guys are gone now.
And kind of brings us to what we're talking about for May 16th, your show at Godfrey Daniels. You say you played there many times. Can you talk a little bit about Godfrey Daniels and the importance of listening rooms of this type?
Yeah, I sure can. I mean, I first got to Godfrey Daniels because my friend Roy Bookbinder, who just passed away 2 months ago, had me on we went on a little tour and I opened for him. And that's how I got into Godfrey's in the first place, you know. And the listening room, coffee house, I'm going to call it a phenomenon because I like the word. It's so important that, I mean, because there are very few places where they're not selling you anything but music. That's what they're selling. You want to go, you're not going there because they also have a great craft beer. You're not. You're going there because you're deeply into music and the people that perform it. And the audiences are small, but they are, they're super into it because they're only there for one, you know, and it's a great thing. And I'm, you know, there's only a, you know, I think I play all of them in the country at one point or another during the year, but there's not many of them left, you know.
Right.
It's a tough business model. I mean, of course, Godfrey's opened in 76. I think I am I'm a month older than Godfrey Daniels. We're both 50 years old now. And you know, I remember years ago reading, I don't know what magazine it was, and there's an interview with John Gorka in there, and he's talking about this place called Godfrey Daniels. And I thought, well, shit, one day I'm going to do that. You know, it took a long time, but you know, cause it's not, it's such a celebrated establishment, and I mean, Godfrey's is my favorite club in the country. You know, it always since day one. You know, it's just such a cozy room, and the sound is so good, and Mona and Dave and everybody that's working there and volunteering there are so great, and it's just such a wonderful. And there it is in the Lehigh Valley of all places, you know.
Yeah, and it's fun. Like, it feels like they're having a revitalization in their 50th year as well, and a lot of young people and young performers just getting this music out. I want to talk about Misfortune Records. I said we're going to come back to that. Can you bring us up to speed? Because I know it's your label. You just released this album, I believe, but talk about that and then anything that you have coming up.
Okay. Well, I started Misfortune Records because coming out of the pandemic, my previous label, and this happened across the board to many labels, they weren't able to take chances. It wasn't going to be big sellers because everybody was in the hole. Pandemic, nothing sold, and they couldn't get people. I mean, it was a nightmare. And so I understand the business enough to know that they have to have somebody that's going to sell a lot of records because they got to pay bills, you know. Yeah. And I'm crazy enough to not care, and I want to put out music that needs to be heard, and it's not. I think that if somebody approached me to be on the label and they could sell in big numbers, I would probably turn them down because I don't need it. I don't want, you know, I need music that needs to be heard on an artistic level, on a, you know, on an aesthetic level. It needs to be heard. And I don't care. It's not like I'm not swimming in money. I'm a broke folk singer. I got enough just to squeak by. So if these releases can break even and have me, that's good enough for me. And the next one is going to be a lost live record of Paul Jeremiah from 1984 that was recorded at another beautiful little listening room folk club in Johnson City, Tennessee, called the Down Home. And that'll hopefully be out I think it's supposed to be out in October.
Did you like find a tape or something, or like how did
what happened was this record was supposed to be released on Red House Records back in 2013-14, had a stroke, and the record got shelved. And at the same time, Red House was sold to a large conglomerate, and it just kind of disappeared. And I'd been hunting for this record. Paul was very excited about it. He was writing liner notes. The tape was edited. He knew exactly what he wanted, and then it just kind of disappeared. So I've been hunting for this tape for a dozen years now, trying to find out even who owned it. And then I was out of the blue, a guy from the old Red House said, "Hey, I was going through a box and I found this master. Do you want it?" And I said, "Well, shit, yeah. I've been looking for this tape for a dozen years, and I thought it was owned by this other company and was lost to me." And it turned out it was never actually under contract. And he's like, "You can have it. You can do what you want." So
how about it?
Well, the goal was I was trying to get it out while Paul was still alive, and I missed. I mean, just he died quicker than I anticipated.
But which is unfortunate, but amazing that, right? It's amazing that you're able to share this, especially the way you found just sitting in a box. Like, come on.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you know, it's such a good, it's the best live country blues record I think I've ever heard. It's so well done. It's so good. And it's early, and he's a monster. He's extraordinarily, he's at peak form in this one.
Are you able to purchase through Misfortune Records online, or is that the best way?
Yeah, you can get it online at Misfortune Records. You can go to Bandcamp and get either the digital download, or you can buy the vinyl there. Or best of all is you can come out to a show and buy it out of the back of my van.
Even better. Fresh.
I like that a lot. Yeah. Yeah. They're fresh. Right.
Exactly. Like, that's I listen to Spotify, but I justify it by purchasing vinyl of the band I want to listen to. Or like you said, Bandcamp, I feel is great as well.
Bandcamp is good to the artist. Yeah, they're great. Anybody is. They're pretty good. And I refuse to deal with your Apple Music and your Spotify. I don't see any good in it for anybody except for Spotify.
Sure, they're ranking it. The only thing I can say through that is I was able to find some artists. Maybe I never would, but then you have to take it upon yourself to then go and support those artists directly, and and you do that by showing up. So last question again: Godfrey Daniels, Bethlehem, May 16th. Todd Albright. I kind of asked you this in the beginning, but what do you hope people take away from the show on May 16th?
Well, I mean, it's just, I hope they walk away with maybe if they weren't fully aware what the country blues is, they might come to understand it better and realize how important the music is and how good it is. You know, I mean, it really is, it's the music of the people, you know?
Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but like, and come off to the place of the people, which is Godfrey Daniels, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Come hear the people's music with the people.
Todd, it's a pleasure to meet you. Looking forward to May 16th. And great having you back in Bethlehem. And appreciate it. All the best of luck.
Thank you, sir. Talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right, buddy.
I'm going back to Savannah, mama. Write my initial down. Write my initial down. Cause it mean all he meant. Women don't.